Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my coat.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on the 20th anniversary edition of Two Jewish is Jim Weiss, storyteller extraordinaire, a pioneer in the unique field of sharing the greatest stories of history and culture with families. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Two Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Two Jewish is paid for by Two Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. This morning, we are celebrating the 20th anniversary of our Two Jewish radio show, an accomplishment we're very proud of indeed. And so, in celebration of 1,046 editions of Two Jewish, providing the very best of Jewish radio and podcasting anywhere for two full decades, we're now officially ready for a champagne toast to get us going. A traditional anniversary toast on Two Jewish, L'chaim, for 20 full years of everything Jewish and interesting, brought to you weekly right here on the radio and by podcast, with never a single repeat episode. Well, actually, we finally had one repeat episode a few years back after a travel medical emergency, but who's counting? Here on Two Jewish, we have been providing Jewish inspiration, news, humor, music, Torah, and shtick, as well as interviewing the most important and interesting figures in the entire Jewish world every week for two full decades. We pledge always to provide the finest Jewish programming available anywhere. Now, you should know, if you don't already, that Two Jewish began with an idea one June day back in the year 2002, when after some casual discussion about maybe doing a radio show, I was told, "You're starting the first Sunday in August." "Starting what?" I asked. "A one-hour show. I've booked the first 13-week block." I gulped. And over the next few weeks, started planning the show. Everything came together. We lined up guests and regular commentators, our mavens, to be on the show, got our first sponsors, and figured out how to play music and do jokes with, you know, style. But we had a huge problem. We did not have a name for our radio show. At first, we threw out lots of potential names. All Jews Considered got votes. Fresh Jewish Air, not much support. One recommendation was to call the show Chop Liver, so when someone criticized us, and if Jews are listening, somebody's criticizing, we could say, "What are we, Chop Liver?" My personal favorite was Deli Home Companion, but the lawyers told us we'd get sued, and we do listen to our lawyers. They are, of course, Jewish. For a while, we called the Not Yet On The Air show Shema Yisrael, Hear O Israel. I mean, it was Jewish, very central to how Jews think about things. That was my friend Tom Price's suggestion. He's been with us for the whole of our long run. The quote is from Deuteronomy 6, of course. Hear O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. One God, indivisible, for liberal and conservative Jews both. So, that would be the name of the show. But every time we told someone we're calling our new radio show Shema Yisrael, they said the same thing. "Oh, that's okay, but it's too Jewish." Or they would say, "Shema Yisrael, a good name, but it's Hebrew and, frankly, it's too Jewish." After five or six dozen of these comments, we got the idea that not only was the show title too Jewish, but the show title had to be Too Jewish, because our focus on Too Jewish has always been exploring just what it means to be fully Jewish in complex times. And that's what we've been, Too Jewish, ever since August 4th, 2002. Well, when we began Too Jewish 20 years ago, our goal was to reach out, entertain, and intrigue anyone and everyone interested in Jewish life, ethics, culture, contemporary events, history, Israel, music, films, books, food, art, holidays, humor, history, as well as anything and everything else Jewish. Too Jewish was designed for Jews of all denominations and flavors, of course, but was also created to help people who aren't Jewish learn about and be inspired by the fabulous religion and culture that is Judaism. By exploring all aspects of Jewish life and living without limiting ourselves to one movement or ethnic or national identity, we hope to explain what Judaism really is in the 21st century. That, by the way, was a much newer century when we started than it is now. That meant explaining what Judaism has been for nearly 4,000 years and continues to be today and for the future. As Fiddler on the Roof taught, tradition.
Tradition! 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 Tradition!
When we first started Too Jewish, we were going to explain, teach, celebrate, and joke about Jewish tradition and make it referable to our discerning radio audience broadly with intelligence and humor. But a funny thing happened on the way to the airwaves. We discovered that contemporary Jewish life is about much more than tradition. It is also consistently about innovation. New and exciting things happen everywhere in the Jewish world almost all the time. Judaism is very much about the process of engaging a great tradition with the best of contemporary life on a constant basis. It is this dynamic process, this continuing evolution of our 3,800-year-old religion into something fresh and new that's at the heart of Jewish survival and development. And that has made creating Too Jewish each and every week for 20 years a continual surprise and an ongoing delight. 1,042 shows in. Now, if you are a Jewish CPA, which might be redundant, you have already calculated that 52 weeks times 20 years is actually 1,040 shows, and we are two full shows late acknowledging this anniversary. But since we Jews use a lunar calendar influenced by the sun, we're just going to stick with the fact that we started August 4th, 2002, and this is about as close as we can get to exactly 20 years of Too Jewish. And so to play us in on this celebratory morning, here's a Shehecheyanu, the Jewish prayer for all good and new things, composed by Meyer Machtenberg and sung by past Too Jewish guest cantor Alberto Mizrahi. Blessed are you, God, who gives life, sustains us, brings us to such a happy occasion. We play this nearly annually for our anniversary.
Yeah.
That was past guest of Two Jewish, Abe Mizrahi, singing the prayer, thanking God for celebrations, the Shehecheyanu, for our 20th anniversary of Two Jewish this morning. Our special anniversary guest this morning, Jim Weiss, is a pioneer in the art and field of storytelling, who should be a hero to everyone who broadcasts and podcasts great stories. Jim has brought the classic tales of the Bible, of Greek mythology, and of so much more of our heritage to families all over the country and the world. Learn how he got started in a very Jewish way as a professional storyteller. Hear his story when we come back in a moment on this 20th anniversary celebration of Two Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish this morning our guest, Jim Weiss, is a storyteller extraordinaire, a professional storyteller, recording artist, and author with more than 30 years and, oh my goodness, so many recordings and fantastic tales that he has told, and has helped popularize some of the classic tales for families all over the world. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish, Jim.
Thank you so much, Rabbi. I'm just delighted to be here.
It's really a great story. You didn't start out as a professional storyteller. Can you tell us how this happened?
It was a confluence of, a convergence of factors here. I grew up in a family that loved classic literature and history. And our mother used to read to us, but my grandfather and my father told us stories. My grandfather had a repertoire of maybe 6 or 7 stories that we all got to know so well we would chime in on certain phrases with him. My father...
That just sounds so Jewish, I don't know.
It was, and you know, but he was a great tease. Every so often he would purposely mess up one of those sentences for us.
Just so that you guys could correct him.
And yeah. Oh, Grandpa, that's not right. It's not? How is it supposed to go? Which, of course, was one of his ways of keeping us listening carefully. And my dad was the biggest influence because he told us bedtime stories. And the stories he told were stories from classic literature and history. And he had nearly a photographic memory. So he would tell the stories to my brother and to me. And some of my great memories are of those story sessions. I can tell you more about that later if you're interested.
Yeah, so, but you did a variety of other things. At one point you worked for a Jewish Federation.
For 8 years, yeah.
You know, significant careers in other areas. And then at some point, you and your wife Randy just kind of took the plunge.
I was in sales and marketing. We were living in the Bay Area at that time in California. And there was no such thing as what I ended up doing. Nobody was doing that. So it wasn't a career move because there was no such established career. Anyway,
You kind of invented the field.
We absolutely did. We like to say we had ignorance on our side. And I was in sales and became so unhappy. People said, you're going to be the world's most successful salesperson because you paint these vivid word pictures, but I wasn't. My heart was not in it, and that was not the path I was supposed to take. And I came home one day at age 40 and said those words no spouse wishes to hear. I don't want to do this anymore. And after Randy picked herself up from the floor, she said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I can tell these stories. You know, I had told them to our daughter. I had been a teacher at one time and used the stories with my students. And I said to her, oh, and I'd been in the studio as a musician a few times, enough to know I felt comfortable in a studio. And I said, I think we should make these recordings. And the people won't know my name, but they'll know the titles because the stories are famous. So we decided to do it, and we created a company. I took the summer off, and I made 5 recordings back to back. And we put him out into the world in September. And part of the deal was that I was going to drop out of sales, but I was going to continue to bring in some sort of income.
Some kind of money. Got to feed the kids.
Yeah, well, and we had put all of our, in those days, meager savings into those first five recordings. So we had to hope at least we could get some of it back. And my family had always been active in the Jewish world. My mother was at one time the executive director for the Brandeis University Women's Group. And she had been, before she went professional into the Jewish world, she'd been the Midwestern vice president for the National Sisterhood. So, and my dad was on the board of this congregation. My grandfather helped found a congregation, a lot of background. And so I got in touch with the Federation in the Bay Area and went in and interviewed, and they needed somebody. And the executive director took a chance and he hired me in the campaign area. And at the end of the first year, we had made back all of the money we had put into the recordings. And we had our first national awards. Eventually, they all won awards. We stopped counting a few years back when we hit
100. That's a nice 100. Problem. You got to stop counting your national awards.
We stopped at 100. Randy says it's great to be able to say, oh, he's got over 100 awards because it means somebody besides his wife likes them. You know. and meanwhile, I went to work for the Federation, and I worked there for 8 years doing both things. And it was odd because at the Federation, I was the guy in that office over there. And in the other world, I was the guy where people would line up for 40 minutes to get an autograph.
You're a big star.
And I purposely didn't talk about that part of my life in Federation.
In the Federation work, right.
Yeah, I wanted them to realize that when I was there, I was giving it my full focus.
Right.
But after a while, the volunteers started saying to me, hey, I got to ask you something, Jim. Are you the same Jim Weiss that my kid or my grandson or my granddaughter has been listening to? I'd say, yeah.
When we put them to sleep, they always listen to your stories.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We have two off-to-sleep recordings, and famously, many people have said we've never heard the second half of either of them because the kid's always asleep in the first couple.
That's right.
So that's how it started. And Randy, who had no business background or marketing background, turned out to have a great latent marketing gene. So she ran the business. And meanwhile, she was getting her own national awards as an educator and counselor of high-risk middle school students. So we each operated with two jobs for about 7 or 8 years. And then I went full-time, and I have been ever since. It's taken me all over the world performing.
Jim, we will talk much more about your stories. Get maybe one of your favorite Jewish stories when we come back in a moment with Jim Weiss, the great storyteller here on Too Jewish. Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this summer and fall. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the Catalina foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary in person. Call 520-276-5675. If you have religious school-aged children or grandchildren, join us for Splash Into Religious School coming up Sunday, August 14th. Find out about our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, Torah Tikes, Confirmation, and Teen programs in a fun, relaxed setting with swimming optional. Beit Simcha Synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road on the north side of Ina, west of La Cholla, near the entrance of the Foothills Mall in our own building. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Join us in person Friday night and Saturday morning. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, Or you can join us every Friday night on our Facebook page for Shabbat evening celebration services at 6:30 p.m. Saturday Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m. All with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, Beit Simcha Tucson. Our services are available there, and all of our Adult Education Academy classes are live and on Zoom. Blended format, you can access those through the website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or email me, rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org. Our wonderful religious school is available in blended format, too, some students live, some on Zoom. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, the religious school and Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, and high school programs, and fabulous array of Adult Education Academy courses, including our new Musar program starting August 10th, all taught live and on Zoom, and of course all of our services in person and on Facebook. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing and most vibrant Jewish congregation in all of Arizona and its exciting beginning years. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or a criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail.com. Or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, 2JewishRadio.com. Streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store is very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 175,000 downloads on Podbean. Post a rating, review 2 Jewish wherever you listen to our podcast. Those comments help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You have been exploring the Jewish world in your own podcast, by the way, highly recommended, Around the Jewish World with Tom Price. Algeria has some deep Jewish history and also some oddities, like, as you just told me off mic, the largest geographic country in Africa by far.
Right. Algeria is by far the largest, but the sort of southern two-thirds of it is largely empty. So it's only the 10th biggest country in Africa by population.
Well, not so many people live in the Sahara, for example.
Well, that's the southern two-thirds of Algeria.
Yeah.
And, you know, very few foreigners penetrated much beyond the coast. The interior is largely unknown. And to this day, it's partially unexplored. I mean, The French do this car race every year from Algiers to Dakar, and you know, people just get lost and they're never seen again. So it's
wow,
a vast,
that's true. I've heard
wilderness
that.
Of unpaved roads and whatever, and not very many people. The coast, however, was settled first by the Phoenicians, and there's speculation based on other countries on the North African coast that some Jews, at least, accompanied these Phoenicians and were there many centuries before the birth of Christianity. But there's no scholarly agreement on that. So most people believe that the Jewish settlement of Algeria began early in the Common Era, particularly following the destruction of the First Temple and the Jewish wars of the second century of the Common Era, and that Jews arrived, ironically, along with Christianity, so that when the Roman Empire, of which Algeria was a part, converted to Christianity, there were already sizable numbers of Jews there. But again, all these foreigners, Romans, Ottomans, Spaniards, whatever.
Was Algeria part of Cyrene, that Roman province, or was it its own thing?
It was Numidia.
Numidia, okay.
Right. And all these foreigners, whether the Romans, the Arabs, the Spaniards, the French, eventually the Ottomans when they were there, didn't go very far inland. So effectively, they ruled over coastal cities. And there were quite a few coastal cities, Oran, Constantine, and Algiers in particular. And at one point, early in the 19th century, the city of Algiers, which was always the capital of this vast territory, was 20%
Jewish. 20%
Jewish? Right. Who knew, right?
Yeah.
Now, that wasn't a lot of people. That was like 6,000 Jews.
Okay.
But the city as a whole only had 30,000. So it was a pretty big minority. They had at least a dozen synagogues. And then it grew further because at that point in time, probably the total Jewish population of Algeria was 20,000, and 30% of those lived in Algiers. Eventually, there were 140,000 Jews in Algeria, and they were further dispersed, so there wasn't this great concentration in Algiers itself, but rather in Oran and Constantine. And basically, Jews thrived where other foreigners thrived, like the so-called French included actually Spanish, Italians, and Maltese, who were united only by their Roman Catholic faith. And we'll get into next week what Jews did and how they lived and when they left Algeria.
That sounds great. It's fascinating. Now I kind of want to go there. We'll talk next week, Tom. Thanks.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service for 20 years now. Saul and Chaim are walking down the street together when suddenly Saul grabs his hat off his head and holds it in front of his face. In a panicked whisper, he says to Chaim, "Oy Vezmir, don't look in front of us. Here comes my wife and my mistress together." Chaim instinctively looks up, grabs his own hat, and puts it in front of his face, and he says, "Oy vey, mine too." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish. Just for you, you should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we begin reading Dvarim, Deuteronomy, the final book of the Torah. The name Deuteronomy captures a midrashic explanation of the essence of this text. It means a repeated teaching, which in Hebrew is called Mishneh Torah. This reflects the fact that the entire book of Dvarim is made up of a few long sermons spoken by Moses, recapitulating the events and commandments established over the previous three books of the Torah. Not a bad accomplishment for a guy with a serious speech impediment. Deuteronomy begins at the end of the Israelites' journey to the borders of Canaan, the promised land, soon to become Israel. Moses informs the people of Israel that he has led them for 40 years, and they have now come to a place and time of greatest importance. Moses recalls the time when the Israelites were just beginning to organize, and he appointed judges and magistrates to help him with the needs of the people. He remembers the instructions that he gave those leaders: be fair and absolutely even-handed in dispensing justice. Do not favor the rich. Do not favor the poor. Show no partiality, but simply seek that which is just and right in the world. Strive always for truth and fairness. This is just the beginning of Moses' long orations, his last hurrah, so to speak. By biblical calculation, he is now 120 years old, 120. His control over his people has waned. His speech is tinged by the bitter knowledge he will not be permitted to enter the promised land. Still, in spite of all of this, Moses teaches us yet again the greatest lesson: justice above all. In this uncertain and often unjust world, we Jews must be pledged to create acts and systems of ethics and justice. What greater calling can any people have then and now? When we return on To Jewish, our guest this morning, the outstanding pioneering storyteller Jim Weiss, will tell us his story and a favorite Jewish story of his. Hear both. We'll return in a moment on our 20th anniversary show, 20 years of To Jewish.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid met with Jordan's King Abdullah last week to discuss an initiative by U.S. President Joe Biden to enhance security and economic ties in the region. The meeting between the leaders of Israel and Jordan was notable, in particular for its transparency. While the two countries have officially been at peace since 1994, that peace has blown hot and cold. There have been tensions in recent years, especially over clashes at the Temple Mount, a site in Jerusalem holy to Jews and also Muslims, where Jordan is the nominal religious authority. Lapid's predecessor, Naftali Bennett, met with Abdullah last year but didn't advertise the meeting. Bennett's predecessor, Benjamin Netanyahu, has not met with Abdullah for several years. Lapid and Abdullah discussed U.S. President Joe Biden's recent visit to Israel and the region, as well as the possibilities and opportunities the visit brought in its wake, including the regional architecture, Lapid said after last week's meeting in Amman. That was Lapid's first visit since he assumed the prime ministership on a temporary basis earlier this month. During his trip earlier this month to Israel and the West Bank and at a summit of regional powers in Saudi Arabia that included Jordan, President Biden pressed for regional security and economic cooperation as a means of isolating and confronting Iran. He also sought to advance the Abraham Accords, the normalization agreements between Israel and four Arab countries brokered by the Trump administration. The Royal Hashemite Court said that the King of Jordan reaffirmed the need to create political horizon to achieve just, comprehensive, lasting peace on the basis of a two-state solution and bolster regional security, stability, and development, which must include Palestinians. Remember, Jordan is about 75% Palestinian. Lapid's statement did not mention Palestinians. Israeli officials say any progress in talks with the Palestinians is unlikely. Israel is heading towards general elections in November, and Biden admitted nothing much will happen till after that. Lapid and Abdullah discussed a number of joint ventures between Israel and Jordan, including desalination, energy, food security, transportation, and tourism. Shelley Greenspan, a former staffer and board member for a number of national Jewish groups, will replace Hanan Weissman as the White House liaison to the Jewish community of the U.S. Greenspan, who is 32, worked in the mid-2010s in the legislative shop of AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, the pro-Israel powerhouse lobby, and has been a board member of the ADL and Jewish Women International. The White House liaison leads interactions with national Jewish groups. Weissman is ending his second stint in the job. He closed out the Obama administration as its final Jewish liaison and then joined the Biden administration as its first. During his tenure, Weissman launched a number of online forums, including frequent pre-Shabbat briefings for the American Jewish community, some of which I've attended. In other news, WhatsApp founder Jan Koum has become the largest individual donor to the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee's campaign committee, spending $2 million to support AIPAC's involvement in this year's Democratic primaries. The huge donation, made in June and revealed earlier this week in a release by the FEC, marks a debut in the world of pro-Israel campaign finance for Qum, a Ukrainian-born Jew with an estimated fortune of $10 billion. Previously, the largest sums ever given to APAC Super PAC, known as the United Democracy Project, were million-dollar donations from Chaim Saban, Paul Singer, and Bernard Marcus. The publicity-shy Qum has kept a low profile recent years following his sale of WhatsApp to Facebook in 2014 in a $22 billion deal and his subsequent departure in 2018 from his leadership role at the merged companies. Qum has spent his retirement from tech building a charitable foundation devoted to Jewish causes. With $140 million in donations to about 70 groups in 2019-20, Qum has quietly become one of the largest donors in the world of Jewish philanthropy. His giving reflects a right-wing and pro-Israel worldview, with significant donations to Friends of the IDF, Israel on Campus Coalition, and the Maccabee Task Force Foundation, a group founded by the late Sheldon Adelson to combat anti-Israel sentiment on college campuses. Qum has also donated $6 million to the American fundraising arm of Elad, a group trying to expand Jewish settlement in parts of largely Arab East Jerusalem, and another $175,000 to the Central Fund for Israel, a group that distributes donations to settler groups in the West Bank. APAC's United Democracy Project has so far spent about $21 million on Democratic primary campaigns, aiming to bolster pro-Israel candidates running for Congress, often against candidates who expressed criticism of Israel. The pro-Israel lobbying group claimed its most recent victory last week when the candidate it backed in the primary for Maryland's 4th Congressional District won. The Super PAC spent nearly $6 million to support Glenn Ivey over the more progressive Donna Edwards. And in depressing news, the former chief financial officer of a Jewish day school on Long Island has been indicted on charges he stole more than $8 million from the school. David Ostrov used the $8.4 million he embezzled from the Schechter School of Long Island to buy rare cars, including a 1965 Mustang, five houses on Fire Island, and sports memorabilia and collectible coins. Ostrov, who was 51, served as the chief financial officer, chief technology officer, and director of operations at the private school for 11 years until last week, when the school says he was fired and, oh yeah, he was arrested. His alleged theft amounts to more than the school's annual operating budget. Ostrov faces up to 25 years in prison if convicted. Schechter of Long Island has about 260 students across elementary, middle, and high schools, is affiliated with the conservative movement. In a board letter to families about Ostrov's arrest, they say the school is growing and has moved to prevent other financial abuses, namely bringing in an outside accounting firm specializing in schools to assist us through this transition, ensuring that our changes are effective, systematic, and reflect best practices in a digital era. We certainly hope so. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews round the world. We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Jim Weiss, is, I don't know, let's say the world's greatest storyteller, certainly among them. I think every podcaster who tells stories owes a great debt to Jim, who was a pioneer of the entire storytelling industry. We heard about the chance that you and Randy took, you know, kind of jumping into the deep water and then becoming wildly successful. How did you choose your initial stories to tell, and how do you choose the stories that you tell now?
The initial stories, I did five recordings the first summer, back to back. And in general, I chose stories I knew really well because I knew I was going to be sitting there looking at the mic and with the engineer on the other side of the glass. I mean, now I have my own studio and I have had for decades, but in those days I would go into a professional studio. Sure. And I didn't want to be thinking both about the technical stuff around me and the stories at the same time. And I wasn't using a script. It was maybe the 15th recording out of the 70 plus I've done that I started using a script. So I just picked stories I knew well and went in and sat down and started telling them. And the first five included one recording of Bible stories. Greek mythology, which was the first one I did just because I knew those stories so well. I told them so often. One of our off-to-sleep recordings, Good Night, a sort of an all-purpose swashbuckler that had on it both The Three Musketeers and Robin Hood and The Arabian Nights. And when I was recording The Arabian Nights, I had three of the four stories I wanted, and I decided to find a fourth story that would be a lesser-known story. I mean, everybody eventually hears Aladdin and Ali Baba and so on. So I looked for a fourth story that was great, but most people wouldn't know. And I found this story, and a week later, having never performed this story, mind you, I'm in the studio, and I start to record this. And I took a sip of tea and looked through the glass and pointed to the engineer, and he started the machine. And I closed my eyes and I started talking. And 15 minutes later, I was done. And I did it in one take with almost no breaks. There were, I think, two times when I thought I might have stumbled over a word, and I went back and redid those. But otherwise, sure, just one unbroken thing. It came through me. I wasn't even thinking about it. And that's what happens sometimes. It's just you feel this thing flowing out and you just get out of the way. And I finished the story and I opened my eyes, and the engineer sitting in the studio looking at me, eyes wide open, and literally his jaw had dropped because he'd never seen anybody do that kind of unbroken thing before.
Right.
And I said to him, Tim, don't expect that every
time.
That'll
never happen again.
That may not happen. It has happened, but yeah, it didn't happen again all the times.
Sure.
So,
sure.
But when it does, it's great. And today, when I do live shows, I don't follow a script. I would tell the story.
I've seen you do a live show, and you know, you're just telling a story.
It's
or a couple of stories or linked stories sometimes.
That's right. And as for how I pick the ones today, the first rule is it has to be something I really love. I won't record anything else. And I've done a lot of recordings, book on tape type things for other publishers too, and turned some down from some very well-known authors because I thought, I don't really like this story, or there's something in this story that I might handle okay, but some of the people who have gotten to trust me, people in my audience, know there's some lines I won't cross. And I'll say, I'm sorry, I know this guy won the Newbery Award, but my audience trusts me, and I won't do that. So we talk about what I love. We talk about, Randy and I will talk about, gee, it's been a long while since we've done a recording for the younger kids or the mm-hmm. older ones, or what era of history have I not covered?
Yeah.
Because I've got stories going back to ancient Sumeria and all the way up into the beginning of the 21st century and from all around the world. So, you know, what have I not done that we think might interest people? And I guess the last factor of it is I've told stories, as you know, about a really wide array of people. And one of the reasons is, two reasons. One is because through stories, and you know this, I know you use this yourself, stories, when you learn through a story, all the armor that we wear around one another, the protective shields, the armor falls off because a story gets you simultaneously in the mind and, even more importantly, in the heart. And so I use stories to bring people together and familiarize them with different folks from different eras and different cultures. And that's part of it. Have I not done something from here or from there? What just feels right that at the time? I remember one recording our daughter said to me, who's now, you know, all grown up and a published author of her own.
Right.
Big surprise, you know.
Shock. How did she come by that, I wonder?
I can't imagine. Anyway, she said to me, Dad, I think a lot of people are in pain right now. We're having a hard time. This is a few years back. Can you do something? So I started looking for stories and put together a recording called A Treasury of Wisdom that included, it had included a story about Solomon, and then it went all the way up through Satchel Paige, the Hall of Fame baseball pitcher, with a lot of stops in between from different cultures around the world. And it allowed me to tell stories that had, that would link people together. And on the one hand, you'd see what was different about a distinctive culture, but at the same time, you're getting the universality. It's much harder to hate somebody if you understand them.
You know, in Jewish tradition, of course, Midrash is the rich repository of legend. And there are so many Midrashim that tell the lessons of Judaism far better than the laws or the commandments can possibly tell because they connect, as you say. Do you have a favorite short Jewish story?
Sure. By the way, a couple of years ago, I went back and redid the Bible story one. They're both still out there, but I wanted to...
By the way, the Bible is still an amazing source of stories.
Oh, golly.
Just
well,
fantastic.
Not
all positive.
This is not a side comment, but it's worth knowing that at least in the Western world, almost all the novels and short stories and movies and TV scripts and so on are really spin-offs from either the Bible or Greek mythology. The story and even a lot of the stock characters that we have, you can go right back, and those are our two sources, our rich sources. And of course, they're both also literary masterpieces. But most of the Jewish stories that I tell are longer, but I can tell you a short one. And this one is interesting. You know, some stories travel all around the world. The two most widely traveled stories in the world, and they couldn't be more different from one another, are the story of the Great Flood.
Noah for us.
And Cinderella. Cinderella, there are thousands of versions. There's literally not a place on the earth that does not have some version of Cinderella. There's a 5,000-year-old Egyptian version they were telling while they were building the Great Pyramid. And they didn't call it Cinderella, but it's the same basic story. So this one I'm going to tell you, maybe the most famous version of it actually is Japanese, but I'll tell you my version of it, which is... biblical, let's just say that. And it's a story that takes place 3,000 years ago in Jerusalem when David sat on the throne of Israel. And his son, Solomon, was growing up, and David was making sure Solomon was exposed to his work as king because he knew that sometime he would be gone and Solomon would assume the throne, and he wanted him to be trained. And so at some point, as the boy reached a certain age, David would bring him with him sometimes during the day to see what he did and answer any questions. And one day, they went into King David's study in the palace in Jerusalem, and Solomon was looking around the room, just curious at all the things that his father had there. And as he kind of made a circuit of the room, he came to one of the tables, and on the table was this beautiful hand-carved, brightly painted wine cup. And it was just a work of art. And Solomon had never noticed it before. So very carefully, he picked it up. His father was at his desk writing at the time. And Solomon carried the cup over and... said, "Father, may I ask you something?" And David looked up and said, "Yes, what is it, my son?" And Solomon said, "What is this? I've never noticed this before." And David smiled and he said, "Be very, very careful with that. That is a treasure to me. Your mother gave me that wine cup many years ago, and it's as beautiful as she is to me. And so, yes, look at it. Be very careful." So immediately Solomon took it back to the table and set it down carefully. And David went on with his work for a little while, and then one of his servants came in and said, "Your Majesty, they are waiting for you now in your meeting room." So David set down his pen and stood up and said to Solomon, "My son, I have a meeting, as you just heard. Would you like to accompany me and listen in the meeting, or would you prefer to just stay here? And Solomon said, if it's all right with you, Father, I'll just wait here. So David goes out with a servant and closes the door. And Solomon is still looking around the room, and he makes a circuit again, and he gets back to that same table, and there's the beautiful wine cup. And he picks it up and admires it from all sides. And then a bright light twinkles off in the corner of his eye, and he looks and he sees the sunlight now is coming in through the window and is striking this beautiful green emerald, carved emerald. And Solomon hadn't even noticed it the first time, circuit around the room, because there was no sunlight lighting it up. But now it's like, wow, you can't miss it. So he sets down the cup and turns to go over and look at the emerald. And with his sight already aimed at the emerald, he's not looking carefully enough at where he sets down the treasured wine chalice. And he sets it close to the edge. And as he lets go and turns, it wobbles. And before he can turn and grab it, it falls off and hits the floor and shatters into 100 pieces. And Solomon says, oh no, what am I going to do? This is my father's treasure, and he told me to guard it, and look what I've done. Well, he quickly gathers up all the pieces, takes them over to the tapestry that's hanging from one wall, lifts the tapestry and pushes all the broken pieces behind, and sets the tapestry back down, thinking, what am I going to say to my father? And a few minutes later, David returns, comes in, smiles at Solomon, goes back to his desk, and resumes his work. And Solomon walks over and says, Father, may I ask you a question? Of course, my son. And Solomon says, well, you're not only a great king, but you're a great religious leader too. And I have a question. David sets his pen down. This time he says, what is it, my boy? And Solomon says, Father, why do people die? And David thinks for a moment and says, my son, I believe that when a person is born into this world, God has already declared how long that person will have. It's part of the great pattern. It's too vast for you or for me to understand, but every person has his or her part to play, and I believe it's ordained ahead of time. And Solomon says, so when there's a death, we shouldn't mourn because it's part of the plan. And David says, well, of course, we can miss the person and mourn. But yes, it is part of the plan, and we should accept that God has declared this is the day this person is going to go. And Solomon walks over to the tapestry, lifts it up, points at the shards of broken glass and says, Father, I have to tell you, God decreed this would be the day for your wine cup. So he got out of any punishment that day.
Well, it's a great story. I hope my kids don't listen to that.
Yeah, don't try this at home.
That's not one you play when you're putting your children to bed.
You can see why I've never recorded that one.
I can see why. But now you have, Jim. It's out for the world. Oh, no. I want to thank Jim Weiss for a fabulous visit here on Two Jewish. We'll have to do it again. Jim, where can people go to find out more about you and all of your work?
JimWeiss.com, JimWeiss.com. You'll see lists of all the recordings grouped by suggested ages or by when they happened in history, if you're studying a particular era, or even by what virtues or values are demonstrated in the story. And then there'll be places you can go from there where you can order them.
Thank you again, Jim. When we come back on Two Jewish on this 20th anniversary edition, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on the 20th anniversary edition of Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Dr. Raphael Medoff, author of the new book, The Jews Should Keep Quiet, Franklin D. Roosevelt, Rabbi Stephen S. Wise, and the Holocaust. Don't forget to join us at Congregation Beit Simcha in person every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat starting at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning, too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush, live in person and available on our Facebook page. Our playout this morning is What Else? The classic celebratory Simon Tovu Mazel Tov for our 20th anniversary of Too Jewish. Oh yeah, and come to our Splash Into Religious School at Beit Simcha, and don't miss my new Musar class starting August 10th. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace. Simon Tovu Mazel Tov. Siman tov, mazal tov, mazal tov, siman tov, siman tov, mazal tov, mazal tov, siman tov. Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.